Today's program is sponsored by Fairway Market.
Welcome to episode 34 of The Morning After. Special guest Pat LaFrieda Jr. on my new friend Sam Richmond and my old new friend Brad McDonald. And my medium new friend, Johnny Black, all here from the exclusive here on The Morning After Beat Group. Is that correct?
Sure.
The Beat Group. And the Beat Group entails?
Brad McDonald, Emily Kilstrom, Elise Rosenberg, and Tamara Hemaway.
Such properties as Colony, Grand Electra.
And a soon-to-be-announced third.
Yes, I wanted to get that out of the way. I'm the guy with the surprise party that ruins it. Hey, I can't wait to go to your party tomorrow. What party? Oh, sorry. We have a great show today. Actually, we're going to talk to our friends over, another new friend at the Spotted Pig. They're going to call in. It's Pride Week here in New York City. I don't know if it's National Pride Week. She's here. Let's go right into her. Jamie Seat, GM at the Spotted Pig. They're having their little shindig over there in the West Village. Uh-oh. Jamie. She's on. Jamie? Jamie Seat?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, what's going on?
All right, so I was just downtown. I was in the village about 2 hours ago, and I saw the festivities kind of getting going. Talk to me. Do I say Happy Pride Week, Merry Pride Week? I don't know. What's the correct vernacular? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're kind of going in. Yeah, I can hear you. Perfect.
It's Happy Gay Pride.
Happy Gay Pride Week. So the Spotted Pig is having a party today. Well, I didn't get that invite, but what's going on there?
You're totally invited. It starts at 5 o'clock. We're clearing out the second floor. We have a DJ and a giant ice cock luge.
Ice cock luge.
Ice cock luge. We were thinking of names for the shots that are coming out of it. We're thinking maybe Santorum shot. Maybe
Pikachu.
Maybe
Fag. And are you gonna chill like Rumplemints and pour it down there? I'm trying to think of like the best kind of thing. I guess I don't know, White Russian shots or something. I don't know what's gonna.
That's what I was thinking.
Is
maybe some Baileys?
Fair enough. The food, is it as X rated or what's going on with the food at this shindig?
You can totally eat. First floor is gonna be a regular restaurant, okay. And then the second floor. If you want to order any food, the full menu is available, so you can dance and take shots and eat.
So if I'm hanging out at the downtown and I want to get over to the Spotted Pig, am I allowed to just walk in, or is there a specific kind of code?
Yeah, no, it's free. It's free to everybody. Just walk in. I'll be the one in a very, very tiny bikini.
Are you serious?
And a leather hat, yes.
What's that new book out? 30 Shades of Grey? What is that book out? Shade? Anyone? It's kind of. You know that one? Wait, we have a guest.
I just read
50?
That.
50?
I just read that.
You just read it. See? Okay, so you were inspired. Okay. Well, once again, I would love to have you in studio again. Jamie C. GM at the Spotted Pig. Anyone that wants to celebrate Gay Pride Week should go to the Spotted Pig at 5 o'clock for a potential shot and some food. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, totally.
We'll see you soon, hopefully in the studio. Wow. That sounds like an interesting party. Jesse, Keith, you're going to that, right?
Yeah, we're going. Definitely.
Are you
going
to do one?
Don't
let me in. Oh, I think they'll let you in. Let's move along here. I was on a show last week called the Lightning Murphy Podcast. It's okay. It's fine. There's a kid that, Brad, can you introduce our guest here? This is a model. We have a model in the studio.
That's my daughter, Marin.
She recently off a photo shoot for an international company. She's in here now. Like most talent, she's feels repressed. She wants to get out and she wants to do some photo shoot. I don't know if anyone tuned into the Lightning Murphy radio show last week, but if anyone wants to check out that interview I did at Franz's Tavern downtown, they can just go on iTunes and type in Lightning Murphy and pull it up. This show already seems to go back to Bonnaroo the past few weeks, but last night Bonnaroo had a Comedy Central comedy special that people should check out. Mark Maron, who does the WTF podcast had a good set on that. Brad, do you ever check out 67 Burger? You ever eat at that place?
I have not.
67 Burger, it's like in
Where is it?
There's one in Park Slope, and there's one in, is it Fort Greene? And I don't know, I eat this stuff every day. What's a burger
place? I'm a pretty strictly Shake Shack guy.
Oh, joke. Well, we're meeting. I have a meeting with Danny Myers people tomorrow, so me too. I love that stuff.
Tell him I'd love to see some staff meals just show up at the door one day. I think that'd be a great gesture.
And when did you discover Shake Shack?
Oh, a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's the first place that made me feel like a real asshole standing in line for a burger for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. I've never had a Shake Shack burger,
but it's worth it.
Is it? What about In-N-Out, Johnny? You look like you're about to say something.
No, I actually love In-N-Out. I mean, I'm from California, so.
Well, really, is In-N-Out better, or is that like kind of the default thing that you say if you're from California?
I just think Shake Shack on the East Coast is probably the closest equivalent you can get to In-N-Out.
Isn't that so crazy how big that brand, Shake Shack brand is? It's only been around for what, five, six years? How long has In-N-Out been around? 100 years?
Oh, they've been around for at least 25 years, I would imagine.
100 years. No, I mean, since California, Southern California car culture, which is what, post-World War II, which is like mid-50s. It has to be around
maybe that long.
50s, 60s. That's crazy.
So before McDonald's?
It's
interesting now, because why would McDonald's take off when so many people think that In-N-Out is like the cult burger?
Well, In-N-Out was smart in the fact that they didn't become complete Ray Kroc, which is not, he wasn't with the original McDonald's guys, but got together with the McDonald's guys, and Ray Kroc was a salesman, and he went to the McDonald's guys and said, hey, I want to franchise this across the country, and basically Ray Kroc was the reason why McDonald's is everywhere. And on that note, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's go meet. We'll talk to Pat LaFrieda, who is the main supplier of the Shake Shack burger. Maybe he'll let us into on the 80-20, 90-10 mix, whatever it is. Morning After. Anyone who's familiar with late night Food Network programming, who's not in the food industry, has become familiar with my good friend Pat LaFrieda Jr., owner Pat LaFrieda Meats, and head butcher, master butcher. Pat, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, Jason?
How are you, sir? So I want to jump right into it. I know there's talks, Meat Men season 2. How close are we to seeing this to come on TV?
Well, things in the TV world move at a snail's pace, but they have asked us for multiple seasons more. The show did exceptionally well, and Food Network really loved it. I think they really loved the ratings. So
the what?
Being that the ratings were so great, they're asking us for several more seasons.
But I think you're being very modest in the sense that you were in a very difficult time slot. I mean, I remember that time slot as the Iron Chef time slot, like the Japanese Iron Chef time slot. What time were you guys on? Like 10, 11 o'clock now?
We were on at 11, yeah. And you know, at first I was opposed to it, but they said, Pat, you really don't want a new show coming on at the same time as other popular established shows. So when it came on at 11, I was a little down and out, but it did so well at 11. It's like, you know, 11's a new 10, and I love that time slot.
they're like they're trying to they're like pitching you the Tonight Show there. It's like, no, no. Don't worry, Conan. Don't worry. Jay's gonna go on at 10, and you're gonna go on at 11. And everything's gonna be fine. Don't worry. But
it's funny. They were telling me, you know, they said, hey Pat, you know, now that the show did so well, we're gonna move it down a little in time. We're gonna, you know, maybe 9 o'clock. And I said, no, I love my 10 o'clock. My 11 o'clock spot.
You're like a prima donna. No. We're doing 10, and that's it. Who's our lead in? I want to know who our lead in is, and that's how it's gonna go down. Speaking of Meatman, have you now, as a, you know, any restaurateur, any chef, you walk into the restaurant, you know, a server might come to you and say, hey, table 13, Mark Pastore, Pat LaFrieda Jr. sitting there. Do we want to send them anything? But now you walk into a restaurant and you are known as the guy on TV. Has that changed a little bit?
I mean, just a little. One season on Food Network, it's not going to really change much. We're already pretty well known in at least our five boroughs. Yeah, we haven't stopped. I love hearing the day after, the morning after, when I see my dad, and he'll tell me how he was someplace and a woman has approached him and asked him for a picture and stuff like that. I mean, my dad,
those trucks are not worth $110,000. I told that kid. That's funny. He got him knocking down walls and everything.
He's a classic. I was at a wedding with him last night, and he had a line of fans, so it was very funny.
Last time we saw each other, actually 2 times ago we saw each other, was at Guga Muga, and you guys roasted off a whole steer, not to be confused with a cow, which is for milking. Your experience at Guga Muga now, a few weeks later, a month later, you know, was it good, bad? I mean, honestly, I'm not saying this because you're on the show, that burger that you guys served was amazing. Was that the Pat LaFrieda blend?
That was the Pat LaFrieda blend. I thought Guga Muga was amazing, but on, you know, it was 2 days. It was Saturday and Sunday, and I think on Saturday, Guga Muga and Superfly, who runs it, really got hit harder than they thought that they would. And, you know, tens of thousands of people came, so they did not really understand how strong of a foodie audience we have here in New York. So, you know, that on Saturday night at midnight, they called me and said, Pat, we need 2,200 burgers because Umami Burger ran out of meat, and they went back to Cali. So in the middle of the night, I had to make those burgers and then drive them over on Sunday morning, and we actually climbed up on top of Umami Burger. We took down on the scaffolding.
Yeah, you did. You went
their side.
Yeah, you guys were in their spot on day 2. That's weird. I just thought that was a natural thing, but that was because they ran out. That's awesome.
That happened between midnight and 8 a.m. We made the burgers. We had to wake up the baker. We had to get buns. We had to get cheese. I mean, it was... I thought Guga Muga was, to me, one of the best experiences I've ever had.
It sounds like a real restaurant experience. You know, you go on Saturday into Sunday, and somebody, some, you know, green guy underordered, no one in this room, of course, underordered for Friday for Saturday. Do you spot now that you have Meat Men? That would have been great if you had cameras with you. Obviously, you can't. You know, you're not a. You know, we're not a freaking Kardashians here, where you got people following you around all the time. But I would have loved to have seen that episode, because that's like, you know, serious kind of running around, making phone calls, all that stuff.
No, it's true, and you know, and that's the whole thing. And our producer spent some of that time with us, and she's like, every minute we're not filming, we're losing great, great footage. But you know, there's always more content there. I mean, that's what our business is about.
We just we talked about Shake Shack a few minutes ago. You're still doing business. Is that you guys still supplying? Is that correct?
Oh yeah. Yes. Not just business. Shake Shack and LaFrieda Meats are kind of partners.
Yeah.
And we have a great relationship with those guys, and they're really expanding. They have a great business, and as everyone knows, Danny Meyer is an amazing guy. I just went out to Aspen with him to the Food and Wine Classic.
Oh, I didn't get that in.
Where I spoke about meat on his panel, and then he flavored different wines with the different meat profiles, flavor profiles. So, those guys are great, and they do a great job at the Shack.
And Danny's a class act, but also, of course, if you're in radio, whether it's podcasts or whatever it is, influences, you're going to listen to Howard Stern. And Mark Wahlberg was a guest on Howard Stern's show this week, and he has a burger concept called Wahlburgers, and I believe that you might be supplying them as well, or have, or to talk to them. What's up with that? Does that happen?
Mark Wahlberg, and I believe it was Doug, called us last year, and they told us about this concept. And they said, all you guys need to do is figure out how to get the meat up to Boston every day. So we've been supplying them since the first day, and it's been a great relationship. They're doing really well there. And Mark Wahlberg, obviously, and the Wahlbergs are heroes in Boston. And it's a great concept. And it's a great burger. They do a great job, those guys.
Pat LaFrieda Jr., thank you for your time. We have a meeting in the next couple of weeks. We're going to talk shop, and we're in negotiations the morning after, and Pat LaFrieda Jr. We're actually going to have lunch. I'm looking forward to that. Other than that, Pat, enjoy your Sunday. I know you work hard.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me on, pal.
Anytime. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to our friend here, Sam Richmond, CDC, Chef de Cuisine, Grand Electrica.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries. They cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information. And be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
You know, Jesse Kiefer just came in to the studio and brought up something funny because today, I don't think it's day one, but this is the, we're double booked with Tiki Disco, and you can hear the bass in the background, literally, like, you could probably hear it on air now, but you can feel it in your bones, which is when we were sleeping at Bonnaroo, well, trying to sleep at Bonnaroo, at 3 a.m., it'd be like, bah, 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 you know, and myself being sort of an old man at this point, the only person trying to sleep at 3 a.m. at Bonnaroo. Strange enough, it started to rain. And Jesse, I don't know if you know this, but while you were sleeping and Nick Africano and everybody was passed out, I got up at 8 a.m. and there was two people getting in their car, and I asked them to drive me to the Holiday Inn. Strangely enough, this guy was one of the Beach Boys' son, I think. It was one of them. I don't know if it was Brian Wilson or whoever it was. But that's how weird Bonnaroo is. At least where we were like kind of in the media section. where you like you'll sit next to somebody and you'd be like, oh, hey, what's up? What's going on? You know, what are you here to cover? It's like, oh, I'm Radiohead's. So Radiohead or Coldplay? Oh, Radiohead, we played there. It's not Coldplay. The guy from Radiohead's wife. You're like, oh, okay, cool. And like it's and you're like in the middle of a farm, covered in dust. Hey. Next time I'm sending a correspondent out, I'm not covering Bonner. I can't handle it. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Well,
Sam, I have a bio here.
Okay.
Can I read it?
If you like.
Awesome. A former economic consultant in Manhattan, Sam Richman discovered his passion for cooking and started his career at 71 Clinton Fresh Food, then to WD-50. Then he dropped everything, literally, and traveled over the pond to Heston Blumenthal's The Fat Duck in England. Then John George for 2 years. And then, strangely enough, dinner at 525, which was a supper club that you did out of your apartment, specifically in your roommate's bedroom, which is awesome. I wish I could have gone to that. Then you went to Mexico for 3 months, and you were friends with Brad McDonald. Brad had a lot of success with the Beat Group, now the Beat Group, then just Colony, and decided to own, become the chef de cuisine at Gran Electrica. And here you are in the studio the morning after. Quite a journey, my friend.
It is.
Welcome.
Thanks.
To the morning after. Talk to me about Mexico, because I'm fascinated by this. I think anyone that came out of '80s, '90s, 2000 restaurant industry has a deep connection to Mexico, because staff that you work with, you grew up with, and you always hear about places like Puebla, Vieques, that's Puerto Rico. You hear about Veracruz. You hear about all these areas, and you know, people going there and visiting and taking 3 months off, but you never get a chance to actually travel there. What was that like?
Well, it was sort of dumb luck for me. I didn't make a conscious decision to go there. I went with a friend who travels a lot, and she happened to be going to Mexico, so I tagged along. And it came at a point in my career where I didn't really know what I was doing, and just was really, in very quickly after getting to Mexico, was really inspired by the food. I was eating food that I never associated with Mexican food. I realized that I knew absolutely nothing about Mexican food before having gone there, and that there is this really rich cuisine that just doesn't really get exported to anywhere, really.
Either California or New York, because Californians always say, well, real Mexican food is California, but they're all derivatives of actually Mexico.
Right.
Now, can you tell me one or two, because I'm fascinated by this, one or two dishes that you know, that aren't too esoteric, that are essentially dishes that you had when you were in Mexico?
I mean, on my last trip, I had a dish twice that I guess is pretty common. That's a stew of pork with purslain, puerco con verdolagas. And it's kind of funny because purslane's this ingredient that is sort of becoming popular amongst market-driven chefs now. It's like this weed that happens to taste really good, and is used as a really succulent raw salad green a lot of times. And here it is in Mexico, and it's been used for hundreds of years, and it's stewed. It's not used as vegetable. It's stewed for a long time until you get these like really tender, long, ropey strands of purslane with pork, and no way I ever would have cooked purslane like that, but there's this great history of using this ingredient in a totally different way. And it's springtime in New York, and purslane's coming around, and I think it's really fun to do a dish like that, where you're taking this ingredient that is sort of new to me anyway, and doing something completely opposite to what I would, you know, what my instinct would tell me.
Your story has become kind of, not necessarily common, but I've seen it a lot in kitchens where you had a specific career for, you know, and you came, you know, so you came to New York, but made a polar opposite decision to enter into the food world, where specifically back of the house, specifically chef. Were you just a food person, and that's how it kind of went down? Or,
well, I worked in a restaurant in high school, like doing prep work and dishwashing in Durham.
Durham. And there's a lot of great restaurants. Well, Portsmouth is a great restaurant town, period. Jumpin' Jay's is a place that I frequent when I'm up there. And in Durham, there's a group that has one or two restaurants. I don't know the names, but maybe you would know.
I'm not sure what you're referring to. I worked at this little inn that opened towards the end of my high school years, that was pretty good food, definitely for the area. And I was just, I wasn't doing it for any passion for cooking. It was just a job. But I think that's a repeated pattern. You find a lot of people that started, that happened to work as a dishwasher, and then it's a shitty job, but for whatever
reason.
England,
New England's seasonal, and a lot of people have restaurant gigs. Can you talk to me a little bit about just New Hampshire, places that you like? Do you agree with me about Portsmouth or Portland?
Yeah, Portsmouth's a ton of fun. Portland, I think, is an amazing city, yeah. Especially for its size, has incredible food,
it's
and they
crazy.
All have great ingredients, which I think is, I mean, it's really appealing to me that you're in a place that has great food, and the ingredients are actually, like, very, very local. And there's something special about them. Portland and Portsmouth as well are both thriving fishing ports. And
we're sitting across here from Brad McDonald. Brad, what's your official title?
I don't know. Call me the executive chef of the group.
And you guys were buddies before.
I met Sam. We helped out with an event that David Chang did a couple of years ago for the Le Fooding event. And that's where we met. We had a mutual friend that worked for them at the time.
And how did you get?
We took a foraging trip upstate almost 2 years ago, and just got to talking about, or maybe it was just about a year ago actually.
I remember you went. I remember you telling me you were going for. Was that a year ago? That
yeah.
was the time.
Just over a year ago. We just got to talking about the new project for me being Colony and where that might lead to, and you know. Just, we didn't really know that much about each other until that trip, and then
we were both going for the same sorrel patch, and we got into a huge fight. Turns out we're best friends 5 years. I'm sorry, it's like for real foraging stories.
Oh, there's plenty of sorrel for everyone.
weird because now you're starting to see a lot of the Mexican restaurants, or whether it's our friends in the booth right now at Tertulia, whatever, like sourcing. Esoteric ingredients from Mexico, whatever. Any particular purveyors that come to mind, other than the Chef's Warehouses of the world?
I mean, we started using a pretty standard, not so great purveyor that there's no point in talking about.
Okay.
And,
no, it's fine. I know which one it is because Brad brings them up every once in a while.
I mean, they have
starts with a B.
Oh no! We use.
And then we found another guy who's a little.
No, your name starts with a B.
Who's a little bit more hands-on, and it's, I mean, I think to take it to the next level, it requires finding people on the ground in Mexico to ship us stuff. There's a lot of spices and chilies that don't even necessarily travel within Mexico. For example, in Oaxaca, there's a lot of chilies that won't even make it to Mexico City. So to try to make a dish using those peppers, there's no way I'm going to find them in New York unless somebody's mailing them to me from Mexico. But at the same time, when I'm trying to pick a dish for the restaurant, I try to choose wisely ingredients that I know I won't have to substitute, that I can readily get or get with, you know, putting in some legwork, but that I won't have to be making substitutions because the ingredient just isn't available.
You did the opening? You're there since day one?
I was, yeah.
Do you feel like the menu's there now? Because I know openings, you have a lot of ideas about what you want to do, and then the public comes in, and whether it's critics or whoever, they have their other opinions, and then, you know, stuff that just didn't work. Is the menu sort of, do you feel comfortable with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think things are coming into their own. One of the things that we really were planning on trying to do, at least it's, we started with a mill in the restaurant to grind our own corn to make tortillas, and we got sent a lemon. It worked for about 2 hours, and we sent it back to Mexico. So since then, we've been buying masa from Nixtamal, and when we our first tortillas, I think we put a ton of labor into them, and we were making tortillas that I would say were maybe the best tortillas in New York City, but they're like a 4 out of 10 if you judge them against tortillas in Mexico.
Yeah.
And now I think Nixtamal's masa is really greatly improved, and our ability to work with it is also greatly improved. And I've had a few moments like recently where I just eat a taco that we make. I'm like, we're really dialing this in. This is awesome.
And Nixtamal's that couple in Queens?
It's
that they basically supply all the higher end fondant elite.
It's not even high. Like, their pricing is really amazing, and they supply all kinds of Mexican restaurants.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is your place as opposed to Dos Caminos.
I'm not sure who's on there.
Yeah, I know they don't sell the Dos Caminos, but I know that they're making a ton of money, and they have great product. Talk to me about the fact, like, going out to England. What's that? I mean, that was sort of a random...
Well, no, I mean, I had been doing apprenticeships at... I had been at WD-50, and they were starting to play with this really modern style of cooking. And then I
Whoever ordered nitrogen.
Right. And so then I heard about the Fat Duck through them. That, you know, the two restaurants were sort of colleagues. And it was just really intriguing to me. And I don't know. I, for whatever reason, became obsessed with the place and wrote them a letter, and they said, come on. So I did. And that was, I mean, it was just important for me to cut off the consulting and make the leap into cooking.
Who would win in a fight, you or Rick Bayless?
Who would win? I think Rick Bayless is too nice to fight. He's got more, he certainly is more experienced with Mexican food by far. I don't know why the we shouldn't make a comparison.
Brad, Rick Bayless?
I'd go for Sam.
I would go for Sam. Brad, I have a lot of questions for you on our next segment. They're very sort of big picture stuff, kind of like the whole corporate focus of the Beat Group, not to be confused with.
I'll take the 60 Beats? Seconds to think about that.
Oh, awesome. But we have also to your left, which was, you guys are on episode 2, and you're Johnny Black. Johnny, what's up?
Hi. How's it going?
Is it true that you were at NoMA?
Yes, I was there for 3 weeks in October.
Did you meet that dishwasher guy?
Yeah, what's his name?
Ollie.
He's Ollie. Yeah, he's on the t-shirt. Yeah. Very nice guy.
Is it like, what's it like working the dishwasher station at NoMA? Is it like very stressful because every plate is worth $100, or like there's not that many plates? Like, is it a normal dishwasher station?
I
want to know about. I don't care about the food. I want to know what that dish station looks like.
It's actually small. It's a small dish station, but it's one room. It's centrally located, and he always just seemed to be in a very good mood. He took good care of the plates. He took pride in what he did. And he was happy.
But, like, all that production that goes on during the day. Like, you know what? That's what, like, the one thing I don't like. Like, you go to these kitchens,
he's not the
right?
only dishwasher.
That have a very big stock program and a very French base that have a lot of, you know, oils and everything going around. But, you know, when does this production, you know, like, a lot of this production happen? I don't know.
His production?
No, just the idea of, like, when the hell, like, you walk into a four-star kitchen... And it's always pristine. But you know they have to do other stuff.
Yeah, there's a whole team.
When is all, he comes in
at 11, he leaves at 2 when the job is done. You know, I mean, dirty dishes in a 1-star restaurant and dirty dishes in a 4-star restaurant.
I'm talking about Rondos and stuff like that. You know, all that kind of production.
All that stuff goes on in the early morning.
This is boring stuff just for my own thing, but it's stuff that goes on in my head.
I'll tell you why he's brilliant. He's brilliant because he walks in every day, and the same as a chef, he walks up to every single person when he arrives, and he says hello, and he asks them how they are, and it could be even in their native language. He's smarter than everyone else in that kitchen.
Oh, that guy. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Brad, I want to talk to you about the future of the group. I want to talk to you about where you see Colony right now. And the future, I want to get you at least to talk about the new restaurant a little bit.
Okay.
Possibly.
All right.
After Brad McDonald, Executive Chef Colony Group, as I have it originally in my notes, I have a little bit of a little bio here for you. A few years ago, a Kickstarter video was posted for a small neighborhood restaurant project located in Brooklyn Heights. That restaurant, Colony, has grown into a mainstay in downtown Brooklyn. With the addition of Chef Brad McDonald after its first year, a native of Mississippi and a chef with a culinary background that scales the globe, that company is turning into an established group, the Beat Group as we know now, with its sophomore restaurant, Grand Electrica, and a third project on the way. Brad McDonald, welcome to The Morning After. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you.
So the last time we met was, you know, we talk, we text each other, we email each other occasionally. We were talking about this new project that Chef Richmond is here talking about. Here you are. You had a crazy year. Can you kind of walk me through it a little bit?
Sure. First of May, I had a kid. First of June,
right,
I came on board at Colony. In December, we started talking about a Mexican restaurant. 4 months later, that rolled out. And now 2 months later, or 3 months later.
But everyone at the restaurant is seasoned, come from different backgrounds respectively. Why a Mexican restaurant?
It was, to be honest, like brutally honest, it was more of an investorship interest that we had. Some investors of ours who are close friends wanted to have a Mexican restaurant in their neighborhood. So they wanted to, put up in order to make that happen.
I mean, a lot of those people are the people that put the money up behind Colony.
Of course.
Correct?
Yeah. It is. It's a nicely thought out business plan for small communities. It's sourced internally from people who live in the neighborhood who are friends.
Have you gotten a chance to do any traveling? Because I know that's a big part of kind of who you are. And
I have not, other than a few days that I spent with Sam in Mexico. Outside of that, actually, I'll take that back. I did spend 2 weeks in Australia for the Food and Wine Festival there.
Yeah, I know.
In March.
I remember, yeah, because you were like, I emailed you. I was like, hey, let's meet up. And you're like, I was like, I officially hate you. I was like, where's up with you? And Johnny, you went too, right?
Yeah, it was awesome.
I mean, I was sick for half the time, if it makes anybody feel better.
You're doing food. You weren't filming The Great Gatsby or anything.
We were sort of a side project from the Food and Wine Festival, a restaurant that, one of my partners, Tamara, is Australian, so he had some friends down there who had connected us with them, and they just wanted us to come down and cook a couple of dinners in their restaurant for a few days.
Sounds like fun.
We said hell yes.
But you were also bringing up a neighbor to you now, Vinegar Hill House, who's one of my favorite restaurants, and they opened a new place called Hillside, which I should definitely check out. Maybe I'll go today. Talk to me about Hillside.
I think what Brian and Gene are doing with the menu there is it's really super honest and very approachable. It's exactly what you'd want to find in a neighborhood spot. The wine list is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. There's nothing on there that's not tasty. I think all of them are natural, if not having some deep story behind them. I don't know the name of the guy that runs their wine program, but he's always around and he's always accessible too. He's always just drinking, carrying around a bottle with him
in the
restaurant.
It used to be BYOB at Vinegar Hill when they first opened. And there was like a liquor store delivery place that you'd like go online and see what you want to like have delivered. I mean, it wasn't like any big wines. It was more,
I'll totally pimp it out for them right now. I mean, they're doing business with Island Creek Oyster Company, who obviously has phenomenal shellfish. Yeah. And, so there's a raw bar. It is a wine bar in essence, but they're also doing some hot dishes. The food's just really simple and straightforward, but very, very well executed.
What about you, Johnny? Any good restaurant experiences recently? I know you're going to say Mission Chinese.
Say Mission Chinese.
Oh. I'm not going to say Mission Chinese. I went to Tortuga recently, actually.
Oh, here we go. Can she come in? This is great. I want to hear a review to somebody.
Yes.
Hello. Yes.
Actually,
Director of Operations, the Tortuga Group.
I had a really great meal there. It was I went and saw Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Whoa.
Afterwards.
Recent guest on The Morning After.
Look at all these connections.
How are you not follow? How do you not know that? Sorry.
No, I really loved. It was like the paella dish. It was like the socrat that was on the plancha and like rolled up. I thought that was very beautiful. What is that?
It was the arroz a la plancha.
Please please identify yourself.
Oh, sorry, Pam from Tertulia.
Pam, what is
Pam
your
Pam Stubbs?
And you just happened to bring up Tertulia, and Pam Stubbs was in the studio.
So I'm glad you enjoyed your dinner.
Oh, it was great.
Awesome,
Pam. Why are you never there when I walk by? There's always like a floor manager gives me a dirty eye.
Because you must come on Sundays
like,
and Fridays and Mondays.
I want to cash in on one free sangria or something. I'm like walking by all the time. I walk downtown.
You should just let me know when you're coming. I'll make sure I'm there.
I'll shoot you a text.
So, definitely.
Awesome. Mr. Chef Richmond, any good recent experiences other than in your roommate's apartment or in your roommate's room or in your room? Perhaps?
After
the dinner.
I'm enjoying Pak Pak a lot.
Pak Pak. Yeah. And that's the chicken, the Korean?
No, the one in Red Hook is the full-blown menu, which is just really delicious food and also sort of hits home because it's another white guy cooking some ethnic food.
We ate there recently, too. It's pretty good. Good.
Anyone else? Keith, come in studio or go on the mic. I need you to relate our future guests and stuff coming up. Keith? What's up, Howard Jesse Kiefer, producer of The Morning After. What's going on in the next few weeks? I know we have a certain a Michael White book, perhaps. And
yeah, working on Michael White. We're working on Will Gadara from Nomad, which just got 3 stars, which congratulations to them.
So hot right now.
Yeah, so hot right now. Who else do I have in mind? Oh, I want to get Red Hook Winery on. Not Abe, though.
Abe.
Darren and Mark.
Chris,
yeah, they want to come in and pop some bottles and taste some wine.
Like Chris Brown and Drake kind of popping bottles or just like popping bottles?
I sure hope not. The space is pretty small in here.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know if you remember that club they were in. It's pretty small there, too. What's up? Any plugs there? Brad, your Twitter feed?
No, just our boy Chris Nicholson at Red Hook Winery. He's off in a...
Is Chris the guy that does the salmon, too?
He's in Alaska fishing salmon right now.
I have a picture of him in my phone, like, siphoning out wine, and then I saw him here on the show. I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, no, I also... My family, I'm third generation, you know, I don't know, sockeye, whatever he's getting out there. But, yeah, that's so random. So, at Bradford McDonald on Twitter, or what is your Twitter feed?
At Bradford Mac.
At Bradford Mac. Also, at Colony...
NYC.
Colony NYC.
At Grand Electrica.
Johnny Black, you have Twitter yet?
Yeah, I do. It's Johnny Black 8503.
Young man?
Sammy Richmond.
What about any more of those pop-up parties? You don't have any time. I'd love to promote one here.
One in 2 weeks ago, so maybe.
Could we do a joint thing? Like promote it here and do it? I mean, I don't want any money or anything.
We could do a joint.
Hang out. Yeah, I'm sure I can imagine what goes on after that. It probably makes Bonnaroo look like Christmas in my house.
My roommate's bedroom's a crazy place.
Oof. I can vouch for that.
Do you take... Is it one of these like young bachelor things where he doesn't have any furniture in there, so it's easy to put a table in?
No, he does. It's just a really big room. And he's really generous, and he loved having the dinner, so...
More than generous. He's like surrendering his room to...
Yeah, but he loved... I mean, it brings him more pleasure than me almost to have these, dinners in his bedroom.
Is he working the business?
No, he works in IT. And he's in front of a computer all the time, and then it's great to come home and have a restaurant in your bedroom.
It's really cool that your friends are here. I'm going to go watch Game of Thrones. On that note, well, I want to wrap up episode 34 of The Morning After. Tune in next week, Sunday, 3 o'clock. You can follow me on Twitter, at the Jason Colucci, at Heritage Radio. Once again, thank you, Joe. Thank Jack Inslee. Thank Patrick Martins. Watch football or soccer. Something's on. And the Olympics. Good day.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.